welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, send it to me, box13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/Radio Detectives. Welcome to our listener support campaign. We do these twice a year to help cover the cost and the time that goes into bringing these programs to you. And also so that we can bring you more of these great shows. The format of our program has made it difficult for us to find advertisers. Indeed, after about our first quarter in 2009, we've went a long while with very little regular advertising, though there has started to be some recovery, and we have had some sponsored shows. We had one in May, one in July, and we'll have one later on in September. However, in the meanwhile, that leaves a lot of unsponsored programs. And so we really appreciate everyone who has given to support the show in the past. Now, throughout the listener support campaign, we will shift our focus from day to day, the Patreon campaign, to one-time donations. Even though we'll acknowledge both, I don't want to talk about both in depth as not to overload or overwhelm the program. Today, we'll focus on our Patreon program, and I promise the intro won't run quite this long every single day. Just a little longer on the introductory day. Our Patreon supporters really do help out the show a lot. Back before we did Patreon, we just did straight listener support. So we would have months on end between campaigns when there was no funds, you know, coming in at all. There were still bills coming in, but no funds to pay them. And really, our support of our Patreon listeners, it provides a great deal of stability to the program and regularity. And you can pledge as little as $2 a month at patreon.greatdetectives.net. Currently, we have Patreon supporters total of 86, pledging $534.30. It would be great to hit 100 by the end of this support campaign. And as we grow in our pledges, we achieve certain goals, we will make some changes. When we hit $600, that will ensure that next summer we will have a full summer series old-time radio program that will be chosen by our Patreon supporters. If you listened at all to The Amazing World of Radio, which you can check out at amazing.greatdetectives.net, that variety format was actually voted on by our Patreon supporters. And we did this short six-episode series just to reward people for their support, even though we didn't quite get to the whole $600 level. But if we do hit that level, we'll have a full 9 to 14 week series, and those who are Patreon listeners will get to help pick what series we'll do next summer. And then at the $800 level, we will upgrade our servers, which is really something that is necessary. Because we continue to get new listeners and an ever-increasing number of downloads. However, it's another increase in expense, but we can do that with ongoing support from our Patreon supporters. So just go to patreon.greatdetectives.net. We'll talk a little bit more about some of the benefits after the program, but now it's time to get into Michael Shane and the case of the high-priced twins.
I opened my office door. Then I stopped. The whole place looked like a bulldozer had just been through it. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw something come down at my head. I tried to duck, but too late. I felt it connect right over my left ear with a sickening crunch. And everything went black.
The New Adventures of Michael Shane, Private Detective, starring Jeff Chandler. Michael Shane, reckless, red-headed Irishman, is back again in his old haunts in New Orleans. This is your director, Bill Russo, inviting you to listen to another transcribed episode, which we call The Case of the High-Priced Twins.
Yeah, if they don't get here pretty soon, come in.
Mr. Shane?
Yeah, you must be Arthur Jeffrey.
That is correct. And this is Linda Oldham. Linda, my dear, Michael Shane.
Hello.
And how do you do, Mr. Shane? It was so good of you to wait here at your office for us.
I just about given you up.
Oh, I'm sorry. We're late. My train was delayed.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jeffrey, you didn't say very much over the phone about why you two wanted to see me.
Well, to be brief, I have been managing the estate of Linda's uncle, Charles Oldham.
Mm-hmm.
Last week, Mr. Oldham passed away, heart attack.
Oh?
It was very sudden. Linda is his only living relative. She came down here to New Orleans as soon as she could.
You just arrived tonight, Miss Oldham?
Yes, Mr. Shane. I've been away for quite a few years.
Yes. As a matter of fact, I had never had the pleasure of meeting Linda until tonight.
Well, look, this is all very nice, but where do I fit in?
Mr. Shane, Linda and I both had every reason to believe that Mr. Charles Oldham was a wealthy man. But since his death, we have not been able to find a trace of money or other holdings. Everything apparently just disappeared, along with Mr. Oldham's secretary.
His secretary?
Yes, a man named Wilkerson.
Oh, you think this Wilkerson made off with the dough, huh?
Well, it looks that way.
The only thing we have to go on, Mr. Shane, is this. My uncle sent this postcard to me the day he died. Here, please read it.
Yeah. Dear Linda, my fortune centers around the Bronick twins. Bronick twins, I don't get it.
We think Mr. Oldham's secretary, Wilkerson, has made away with the Bronick twins.
Well, look, have you tried the Missing Persons Bureau?
No, I'm afraid you don't understand, Mr. Shane. The Bronick twins aren't people.
They're not? What are they?
The Bronick twins are two identical small coins, Mr. Shane, each about the size of a dime.
Two small coins? Look, Jeffrey, I'm no coin collector. I've got enough to do without running around looking for two small coins. Why don't you take it to small claims court?
Mr. Shane, this is not exactly a small claim we're talking about.
What do you mean?
Simply that these two coins, the Bronick twins, are worth approximately $35,000. Find them, Mr. Shane.
In a moment, we'll return to the new adventures of Michael Shane and the case of the high-priced twins.
Well, I've been hired to look for a lot of strange things and people in my time, but never before had it been a couple of coins quaintly named the Bronick Twins. They belonged to a dead man named Charles Oldham. According to the dead man's niece, Linda Oldham, and the estate manager, Arthur Jeffrey, the coins were worth 35 grand. Well, I told them I'd start on the job first thing in the morning, and they walked out of my office. They didn't get very far down the hall. I ran to my office door and jerked it open. Arthur Jeffrey was lying in the hall. Linda was crouched against the wall, trembling. There was a little guy just disappearing down the stairs. I took off after him. Hey, you, stop! Well, he was too fast for me. By the time I got to the front door, he disappeared around the corner. I went back upstairs. Linda was helping Jeffrey to his feet.
Mr. Shane.
Yeah, you okay, Jeffrey?
Yes, I believe so. He just stunned me.
What happened?
We were walking down the hall when that man jumped out at us. He knocked Arthur down and started to search him. I screamed and he ran away.
Yeah. I wonder how Felix fits into this deal.
What? You know the man?
Yeah, sort of.
Well, who is he?
Little drifter named Felix. There's almost anything for hire.
Well, I think this incident should cause us to redouble our efforts to find the Bronick twins.
I took the two of them back to their hotel. After we got Linda tucked into her room, Jeffrey and I went to his. I asked him for a description of Wilkerson, the missing secretary. He fished around in his pocket a minute and then pulled out a snapshot.
Here, Mr. Shane. This should serve you better than a description.
Yeah. So that's Wilkerson, huh?
Yes.
Well, I'll see if I can turn up anything on him. About those Bronick twins, how come just two small coins like that are worth such a lot of dough? What's the story on them?
Well, all I know about them is what Mr. Oldham told me once.
It seems that something over 100 years ago, the town of Bronig in Austria decided for some reason to secede from the rest of the country.
You mean they wanted to go in business for themselves, huh?
Yes, in a manner of speaking. At any rate, they set up their own government and started stamping out coins. But almost immediately, Austrian troops moved in and took over.
And these two coins are all that are left?
Yes, the Bronig twins are the only two of their kind in existence, which, of course, accounts for their value. Mr. Oldham showed them to me once. He used to keep them in a leather case.
Just one more thing.
Yes?
You say you'd never met Linda Oldham before tonight, huh?
Why, no. She left her uncle's home long before I went to work for him. Why, Mr. Shane?
Ooh, no reason. I'll call you as soon as I find out anything. The next morning, for lack of any other starting point, I made a list of all the coin dealers in New Orleans and started making the rounds. Everywhere I went, I shoved the snapshot of Wilkerson across the counter. None of the dealers recognized the face. So it was just about dark, and I was just about ready to trade the snapshot for a steak and French fries when I wandered into the next to last place on my list. It was a small office on the second floor. On the door was just a name, Dwight Hannibal.
Yes? What can I do for you?
You, Mr. Hannibal, the coin dealer?
Yes, Dwight Hannibal, numismatist.
Yeah. I don't suppose you've ever heard of the Bronig twins.
What? What's that?
The Bronig twins. Does that ring a bell with you, Hannibal?
What do you know about the Bronig twins, Mr.?
Shane.
Shane.
Long as I started out asking the questions, let's keep it that way. Now, what about the Bronig twins?
Good day, Mr. Shane.
Come on, open up. Here, take a look at the snapshot. Guy named Wilkerson. Does it mean anything to you?
Well, I mean...
You've seen him before.
Mr. Shane, I don't intend to give you any more information.
Look, maybe this will make you a little more cooperative. If there's a sale involved, I'll see you get a commission.
That a promise, Mr. Shane?
That's a promise, Mr. Hannibal.
Very well. And this man Wilkerson was in to see me yesterday.
Yeah?
He told me about the Bronig twins and promised to bring them in today. But he hasn't shown up.
He give you his address?
Yes. Oh, yes. The Lafayette Rooming House, you know, on St. Louis Street.
Uh-huh.
Room number 7.
Yeah. Okay. Did he have the Bronig twins with him when he came yesterday?
No. He said he didn't want to carry them around, but he was going to bring them here today. Can't understand why he hasn't shown up. What?
Quiet.
What's the matter? Mr. Shane, what is the matter?
I thought I heard something out in the hall. Guess I was mistaken. Well, thanks for the information, Hannibal. I'll see you later. I went downstairs and outside. It was dark now. I started walking toward St. Louis Street. A few doors away, I passed a long black convertible. Just then, the car door opened, and a beefy-looking gent shoved his face out.
Hey, Mike.
You mean me?
Yeah, Mac. Come here a minute.
The name is Shane.
Sure, Mac. Hop in.
No, thanks.
I said hop in, Mac. We're going to go see the boss.
Who's the boss?
I forget his name, but he'll remember it.
Now, look, I haven't got time for interviews.
The boss has, Mac. Now, do you get in, or do I have to take this gun out of my pocket and convince you?
Okay. I'm convinced. Let's go, Mac. Twenty minutes later, I was ushered into a very swank apartment. Sitting in the living room was a guy whose face looked vaguely familiar to me. A very smooth-looking article in his middle 40s.
Okay, Freddy. Leave him here.
Yeah. Be in the other room if you need me, boy.
All right, would you mind telling me what this is all about, Mr.?
Lombard.
Lombard. Yeah, I thought I'd seen your face before. A little gambling and assorted similar enterprises, isn't it?
I like your way of putting things, Shane. Assorted enterprises. Yes, I like that. I may have it painted on my door.
You do that. Also, maybe you better paint on the door why you wanted to see me.
Very simple. I want the Bronig twins, Shane.
The Bronig twins? Well, you know, that gives us something in common, Lombard. I'm looking for them, too.
Yes, I know.
Sure, your boy Felix has probably kept you informed about my progress.
Felix?
Yeah, the little drifter you hired to jump off at Jeffrey's last night.
Felix. I'm afraid the name escapes me, Shane.
Yeah, I'll bet. Felix escaped me last night, Lombard. Maybe next time he won't be so lucky. Next time you see him, you might tell him that.
Why, I doubt I shall be seeing anyone named Felix, but if I should, I'd be glad to deliver your message, Shane. You can go now. But remember one thing.
What's that?
When and if you find the Bronick twins, you'll bring them to me.
How come you're so hot to get them?
Most people collect things, Shane, whether they know it or not. I collect one and onlys.
Huh?
If there's only one thing of its kind, I've got to have it, whatever it is.
That could be an awfully expensive hobby, Lord.
It is, but I can afford it. You see that blonde just leaving when you arrived, Shane?
No.
Oh, too bad you missed something. There aren't any others like her. She's unique. I collected her. It's the same with the Bronick twins. They're the only ones of their kind, and I'm going to get them, too.
Good luck, Lombard.
I'll get them, because you'll bring them to me. Don't make me wait very long.
Nice guy, Lombard. I somehow got the idea he meant what he said. I didn't stay to argue the point. I was in a hurry to get over to the Lafayette rooming house on St. Louis Street, where Wilkerson and the Bronick twins were supposed to be. Then, just as I got there, I happened to look across the street. There, standing on the corner, was the little drifter, Felix. But as soon as he saw me looking at him, he darted out of sight, and I knew I had no chance of grabbing him. So I went into the rooming house and down the hall to number 7. No answer. No answer twice. Yeah, unlocked. 3 steps into the room and I stopped. From the looks of things, I was just about 5 minutes too late. The window was open and the breeze was slapping the curtains around. And Wilkerson, the secretary I've been looking for, was lying on the bed. He matched the snapshot all right. And he didn't seem to mind the draft at all. Then dead men seldom do.
In a moment, we'll return to the new adventures of Michael Shane and the case of the high-priced twins.
It all started when Arthur Jeffrey and Linda Oldham hired me to look for the Bronick twins, 2 rare coins that had belonged to Linda's late uncle. They seemed to think the dead man's secretary, Wilkerson, had run off with the coins. The next day, I found a jittery coin dealer named Hannibal who told me Wilkerson had been dickering with him about the Bronick twins. I got Wilkerson's address from Hannibal, a rooming house in the quarter. But when I finally got there, I was a couple of minutes too late. Wilkerson had been stabbed to death very recently. I found a payphone down the hall and called homicide. Then I went back to Wilkerson's room. It occurred to me that the killer had left in a hurry, and maybe, just maybe, while I searched the room, got nowhere. And then in the closet, I saw a hole in the plaster. I stuck my hand through and pulled out a red leather case about 6 inches long and 3 inches wide. I slipped it into my pocket and went back to my office. And then I opened the red leather case. And there they were, the Bronick twins, nesting cozily in black velvet. 2 tired-looking coins the size of dimes with some writing on them that I couldn't read. Then I heard a noise in the hall. I shoved the coins in my pocket and pushed the case into my wastebasket and dropped a newspaper on top of it.
Hello, Mac.
You again. Now look, muscle man.
Come on, Mac. Time for another interview with the boss.
Look, it's midnight and I'm
off... Mac, on the double. This gun says so.
Okay. Okay, Freddy, but you couldn't have picked a worse time.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
Lombard will love me.
That all depends, Mac.
Depends on what?
How much you cooperate with him.
I'm afraid it isn't a question of cooperating anymore.
Huh?
It's just a case of getting caught with... Oh, wait a minute.
What's the matter?
I just remembered I'm out of cigarettes.
Oh, come on, come on.
No, really, I don't have...
Look, Mac, I got plenty of them.
Well, you don't smoke my brand, Freddy. Now, look, I can get some right here in this cigarette machine.
All right, but step on it.
Yeah, sure, okay. Hey, what's the matter with this machine?
Come on. All right, cut it out.
The machine doesn't work.
I said cut it out. Cut it out, will you? A wise guy, huh, Mac? Are you trying to make enough noise to bring some help your way?
Okay. You found me out. You're a clever boy. Yeah, let me plug this coin slot first. The machine's out of order. Yeah. Okay, let's go. You're wasting your time searching me, Lockhart.
Now, look. You came away from Wilkerson's rooming house with the Bronick twins.
Which one of your trained SEALs did that job, Lombard?
What job?
Killing Wilkerson. Was it Freddy here or was it Felix?
I don't know what you're talking about, and who is this guy Felix?
Still never heard the name, huh?
No.
Are you through searching me yet?
Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay. So you don't have the coins on you. Where are they?
You see, you just didn't put your hand in the right pocket.
Huh?
Hey, give me a hand. I'll show you.
Let go of my arm.
Shane. There, this hammerlock ought to keep you between me and Freddy's gun, Lombard.
Let go of me, Shane.
Just a second, Lombard. Just a second. Okay. Oh. I lunged down the hall, around the corner, dove down the stairs, and tore out the front door, collecting a few bruises, but no bullets. And after I hit the street, I figured I was safe, so I slowed down a little and started thinking. I had a strong hunch it all hinged around Felix, the little guy who jumped Jeffrey. The little guy who seemed awfully hard to find all of a sudden. I dropped in at a couple of bars that were favorite hangouts of Felix's. Not tonight, though. There was no sign of him. At one of the dives, I ran across the next best thing. She was sitting at the bar, the girl I'd seen Felix with a lot in the past. I slid into the stool next to her. Hello, Suzette.
Who are you? What do you want?
I want to talk about Felix.
Go away.
Where is he?
How should I know?
I'll take the chance you do. You tell him I'm looking for him. Tell him I'll find him.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Tell him whoever's hiring him will be wanting Felix's mouth closed for keeps once the job's done.
I tell you, I don't know what you're talking
about. Okay, Suzette. Just give him that little message, huh? That is, if you should happen to see him. I went back to my office building and into the lobby. Stopped at the cigarette machine, but after thinking it over a couple of minutes, I went upstairs to my office. I stopped. The whole place looked like a bulldozer had been through it. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw something coming down at my head. I tried to duck, but too late. I felt it connect right over my left ear with a sickening crunch. And everything turned black.
In a moment, we'll be back with the thrilling climax to tonight's Michael Shane adventure.
Well, there I was on the floor of my office, suffering from a slight case of hit on the head. Then gradually the blackness started to thin out a little. I could see someone bending over me. It was Arthur Jeffrey.
Mr. Shane.
Yeah. Oh, Jeffrey.
Mr. Shane, are you all right?
Yeah, I guess so. What happened?
Well, I don't know. I've been trying to reach you by phone all evening, and finally I became concerned. I came over here to your office and arrived just in time to see a small man darting away. I ran upstairs and, well, I found you like this.
Did you get a good look at the guy?
Well, not a very good one, I'm afraid.
Was it Felix? You know, the little guy who jumped you?
It could have been. I'm not really certain, Mr. Shane.
Yeah. Well, looks like he took a good look around the office. What a mess. Place looks like my head feels.
Well, obviously, whoever it was searching for the Bronick twins, Mr. Shane. Which is why I've been trying to reach you all evening, to find out what progress you've made. Have you located the coins?
I know where they are.
You have them?
I said I know where they are.
Mr. Shane, your manner is slightly evasive.
Yeah. A couple of things have happened to me lately to make it that way. Look, you go get Linda and come back here. I'll turn the Bronick twins over there. Jeffrey's face lit up like a jukebox when I told him that, and he scurried off to pick up Linda. I spent a couple of minutes putting my office and my head back together, and then I went downstairs. Apparently, I was holding open house tonight. There was a visitor waiting at the bottom of the stairs.
Good evening, Mr. Shane.
Well, Dwight Hannibal, the coin dealer.
Numismatist.
Yeah, I know, numismatist.
Yes. Mr. Shane, you promised to keep in touch with me, and you did.
Yeah, I told you if there was a sale, you'd be cut in, but there's not going to be a sale.
But, Mr. Shane...
As long as you're here, though, you might as well take a look at the Bronick twins.
Where are you going?
The cigarette machine here.
I don't understand.
It's very simple. I press the coin return button, and out drop the Bronick twins.
You've been hiding them in that cigarette machine.
Well, at the time, I didn't have much choice. Yeah, I guess I can take the plug out of the coin slot now. Well, there they are, Hannibal. The Bronick twins.
Mr. Shane, is this your idea of a joke?
Joke? What do you mean?
These two coins are Austrian Pfenniger, worth nothing.
What?
Worthless.
Don't give me that.
It's true, Mr.
Who paid you to tell me that?
Go hook me, I swear it, Mr. Shane. The coins are worthless.
I think you're telling me the truth. Doesn't make sense. Why?
I don't know why, and I don't care. And furthermore, I wish I'd never heard of the Bronick twins or of you. Good night, Mr. Shane.
Hannibal stalked off, and I went back upstairs and slumped down in my chair. I was beat. Here I've been knocking myself out and getting knocked out for two worthless coins. It occurred to me that old Mr. Alden must have had a pretty twisted sense of humor to play a trick like that on his niece. That message he sent her about his fortune centering around the Bronick twins, and all the time... Then I stopped. Fortune centers around the Bronick twins. Yeah, it was as simple as that. A red leather case. I scooped up my wastebasket and started tossing papers out, and there it was, right where I'd put it. I opened it up and ripped off the black velvet lining. There was a message in white ink, and this time it made perfect sense. I dropped the case in my pocket, turned out the lights, and tore down the stairs out on the sidewalk. I bumped right into Arthur Jeffrey and Linda Alden.
Mr. Shane, Arthur said...
Look, Jeffrey, would you mind waiting in the lobby a minute or two? I want to talk to Linda.
No, I don't mind, but it's rather late.
Well, listen, only take a minute.
All right.
Mr. Shane, I'm afraid I don't understand what this is all about.
Linda, I have the Bronick twins.
You do? Oh, wonderful.
Not so wonderful. According to a coin expert, they're worthless.
They're what?
Worthless.
Oh, that's bad news, Mr. Shane.
Yeah.
It's an awful disappointment. I don't understand why Uncle Charles would... But that doesn't matter now, I guess. Well, I want to thank you anyway, Mr. Shane. I'm sorry you went to all the trouble.
You're willing to let it go at that, huh?
Well, there's not much else for me to do, is there?
Okay.
Hmm?
You just passed a little test, Linda.
Test? I don't understand.
Here's the leather case the coins were in. Read the message written on it.
Message? Linda, I can't trust anyone around me, so I'm taking this weight... Mr. Shane, the message tells me where to find the key to the safety deposit box.
Yeah, I think you'll find your uncle's money in that box. Your money, no.
But it's also...
Confusing? Yeah. Don't worry about it. Just take the case and... Well, maybe you better leave now. I got a little stalling to do.
Well, I don't know how to thank you, Mr. Shane. I don't know how much will be in the box, but I want you to know I'll send you a check as soon as I find out.
That'll thank me fine. So long, Linda. I went back into the lobby. Jeffrey and I started upstairs to my office. He had a very puzzled look on his face, but he didn't say anything. I opened the door to my office and we went in. I reached for the light switch, but before I could click it, a voice cut through the darkness.
Mike, don't turn the lights on.
Huh?
It's Felix. Don't turn the lights on. I don't want anyone to see me here.
Felix, what are you...
I know you've been looking for me, and I've been hiding, but I can't hide anymore. He's out to kill me. I know that now.
Shut up, Felix. Shut up.
I want to tell you, Mike, you got to protect me. I'll tell you everything.
Felix, will you...
It was Jeffrey, Mike. Jeffrey's the one.
Oh, fine.
He had me to jump him when he left your office to make it look like he was legit. Then he had me follow you to the coin dealers. I overheard the guy tell you where Wilkerson was staying. I told Jeffrey, but I didn't know he was going to kill Wilkerson.
Look, Felix,
Another thing. I was hiding down the hall a while ago. I heard Jeffrey tell you he thought it was me who slugged you. I didn't do it. Mike Jeffrey did, so he could search you. Then he brought you two so you wouldn't think he did it.
Are you all through now, Felix?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll turn on the lights.
Jeffrey!
Yes, indeed, Felix.
Mike! Why didn't you stop me?
Small matter of a gun in the side of my neck.
Jeffrey,
I'll get to you in a moment, Felix. Quiet. First, there's a small transaction with Shane. The Bronick twins, please.
You know, the way it's beginning to fit together, you and Wilkerson were in the deal together. He swiped the coins and you were to meet in New Orleans and split. Only Wilkerson decided to hide out.
Mr. Shane, the Bronick twins, please.
Okay. Here they are, Jeffrey.
Bah! Not the coins, the leather case.
Oh, you figured it out, too.
The case! Shane, by the time I count three, if you haven't given me the case,
that's going to be a little hard to do, Jeffrey. You see,
one.
Two.
Okay, Mac. Lombard.
Stay where you are, you. Shane!
Hey. How it goes, Mac?
Freddy, I never thought to see the day when I'd be glad to see you, but I'm glad to see you. You took Jeffrey's eyes off me just long enough so I could clip him.
Look, Mac, I don't know nothing about that. All I know is Lombard
Yeah, I know. Your boss Lombard wants the Brownlee twins for his one and only collection.
That's right, Mac. And this time...
You know something, Freddy? I'm going to let you have them.
Huh?
There they are on the desk. Help yourself.
Well, that's real cooperative of you, Mac.
Yeah, just one thing. When you give him the Lombard, you better start running.
Running? Why?
Because I got a strong hunch Lombard's going to be awfully unhappy. Mac.
This is your director, Bill Russo, again. Our story is based on characters created by Brett Halliday and is written by Bob Reif. The music is composed and conducted by John Duffy. And Michael Shane is portrayed by Jeff Chandler. The New Adventures of Michael Shane is a Don W. Sharp production, transcribed in Hollywood and distributed exclusively by the Broadcasters Guild.
This is Andrea J. Graham, author of the Web Surfer series, oh, and A Madam's Wife. You're listening to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio.
Welcome back. Well, an interesting twist have the case actually be what mattered. And, of course, the whole story was a little bit evocative of the setup for the Maltese Falcon, though, with a little bit of a different outcome. Now it's time to officially announce the new programs bringing to you on Monday coming next season. And the only new program will be Night Beat. Initially, I thought we would have gotten to this late this season, but the way things turn out, we will actually start Night Beat early next season and will be with us for more than a year. We've gotten a couple of preview episodes. It's a wonderful program, and I think you're going to enjoy it. Now, a little bit more about our Patreon program. And essentially, for Patreon supporters, we have five different levels of support. The first is at the $2 level, which is the rookie level. And that's just simply a thank you on the program. At the $4 level is the Shamus level, and you get access to our premium site. And $7.14 is the Detective Sergeant level. $15 a month is our Master Detective level. And that includes the ability to record a bumper, which is played every now and again on the program. And then at the $30 level, that is our Chief of Detectives program. And when you're one of our Chief of Detectives, you can actually request and suggest special programs that we will do on the podcast feed as a Patreon special for Chief of Detectives. Now, there are a lot of other benefits that are offered, and we will fulfill those on request. But we've had hardly anyone take advantage of them. For example, the Master Detective level comes with one Colonial Radio Theater audio drama every 6 months, and have not had anyone actually request that particular benefit. So if there's interest, we'll do that, but we won't go into great detail on it on the air. But it does build a lot of stability in the show, and Patreon listeners are, we'll often send a lot of questions or opportunities, as well as occasionally a preview of something. For example, Patreon listeners had the opportunity to listen to the first episode of The Amazing World of Radio before it ever aired. So whatever level, we definitely would appreciate that. Patreon.greatdetectives.net. We also do welcome one-time donations, and we'll discuss some of the thank you gifts that come with that tomorrow at support.greatdetectives.net. Coming up tomorrow, be sure and listen to The Lineup. And then next Monday, join us back here for Michael Shane. In the meantime, send your comments to Box 13 at GreatDetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives. And become one of our friends on Facebook, Facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.